work group, and she's going to be giving an update on your title of your presentation is Recent Changes in ACIP Recommendations for the Use of Tdap Vaccines.
Thank you. Thank you, Tammy. So good afternoon, everybody. I think it's fitting in the sense that we've heard a lot about the epidemiology of pertussis and all the activities that have been going on with regards to diagnostics. So I think it's fitting to be able to end with a summary of the recent changes to the Tdap recommendations. So as I show here, the objectives of my talk are to present the recent changes to the ACIP Tdap recommendations in addition to discussing the rationale for these changes. So as many of you are aware, in 2005, ACIP recommended both adolescent and adults should receive a single dose of Tdap instead of tetanus and diphtheria toxoid vaccines, or TD, for booster immunization. There were two separate statements that were published, one for adolescents and one for adults. There are two licensed Tdap vaccines available in the United States, Boostrix, which is manufactured by GlaxoSmithKline, and Adacel, which is manufactured by Sanofi Pasteur. So since the 2005 recommendations, Tdap coverage among adolescents has increased, and in 2009, coverage was reported to be over 55%. But compared to adolescents, as we've heard previously and from other speakers, the coverage of Tdap among adults was reported to be less than 6% in 2008. So just a little bit of background. So the primary charge for the pertussis vaccines working group was to consolidate the four pertussis vaccine statements, both the infant and child, the adolescent statement, the adult statement, as well as the pregnant women pregnant and use of pregnant Tdap in pregnant women statement. And while doing so, to review any new data that was available on Tdap. Timing is everything, and we thank California for paving the way for their changes to their Tdap recommendations. And so part of our charge was also to facilitate, with these changes in the Tdap recommendation, was to facilitate the uptake of Tdap among age groups by removing identified barriers and programmatic challenges. So just briefly, the language around the 2005 ACIP Tdap recommendations addressing interval between TD and Tdap in both the adolescent and adult statements, which are shown here, were not specific and were different. In adolescents, they recommended an interval of at least 5 years, and in adult, it was either an interval of less than 10 years or as short as approximately 2 years. So, you know, there was the perceived barrier that was created by this language. This slide shows the examples of how the language addressing interval created a barrier to Tdap vaccination, which, you know, I know many of you are very familiar with because, you know, we would get calls from providers or from our state health partners about how to interpret this language. So a survey among primary care physicians on the interpretation of the adolescent recommendations, 48% of physicians stated that the shortest acceptable interval before providing Tdap would be 5 years, whereas 44% would wait at least 2 years. 27% of healthcare workers did not plan to receive Tdap because they had received TD within the last 2 years. And then the last two bullets are with regards to that the major barrier to vaccination or vaccinating parents with infants was not knowing the date of recent TD booster. So after consideration of recent safety data, ACIP approved the following changes to the language addressing interval between TD and Tdap, basically stating that Tdap should be administered regardless of interval since the last tetanus or diphtheria toxoid-containing vaccine. And while longer intervals between TD and Tdap vaccination could decrease the occurrence of local reactions, the benefits of protection against pertussis from shorter intervals outweigh the potential risk for adverse events. So the second update is with regards to use of Tdap in adults aged 65 years and older. So several studies have provided evidence of known sources of pertussis transmission to infants, household members were primarily responsible for transmission of pertussis to infants, and grandparents are included that, where we show in yellow that about 6% of grandparents were identified as the source. The 2005 Tdap recommendations for adults ages 65 years and older stated that both Tdap vaccines are licensed through persons 65 years of age. And so the 2005 language did not allow for permissive use of Tdap in this age group and left a gap in the pertussis vaccination program. So again, review of data by ACIP showed that there was no demonstrated increased risk of severe local reactions or serious adverse events. And so ACIP in October approved on the expanded use of TDAP in adults ages 65 years and older. And so, you know, there are the two points that adults ages 65 years and older who have or anticipate having close contact with an infant age less than 12 months should receive a single dose of TDAP, and that other adults may be given a single dose of TDAP. The third change that was accepted in October 2005 was the use of TDAP in under-vaccinated children aged 7 through 10 years of age. So this morning, Tom Clark presented this just a brief summary of this pertussis immunization schedule in the United States. You know, we're very familiar with infants receiving DTaP at 2, 4, and 6 months of age, and then the booster with the fourth dose at 15 to 18 months, and then the preschool booster dose between 4 and 6 years of age, with then the recommendation for TDAP preferred at 11 to 12 years of age, which left a gap for the 7 to 10-year-olds who were under-vaccinated. And then the 2005 recommendation stated that that age group, the under-vaccinated 7 to 10-year-olds, should wait until they reached the age of 11 before receiving the TDAP vaccine. So this is the updated recommendation from ACIP, which recommends that 7 to 10-year-olds who are not fully vaccinated against pertussis should receive a single dose of TDAP. So vaccinating healthcare personnel. So there are about 12 to 14 million healthcare personnel in the United States, and protecting healthcare personnel from acquiring and transmitting infectious disease is a public health goal. In the 2005 ACIP recommendations, the ACIP recommends healthcare personnel with direct patient contact to receive TDAP as soon as feasible, and that other healthcare personnel should receive TDAP when they are scheduled for the next TD. So there was a difference for healthcare personnel, for those who had direct contact with patients and those who didn't. The recommendation also addressed intervals since the last dose of TD. So since the 2005 recommendations, where are we? Two papers report that hospital-based coverages were 60% and 72%, but these were both part of vaccination campaigns which occurred after a pertussis outbreak. But from the 2008 National Health Interview Survey, self-reported TDAP vaccination coverage among healthcare personnel was less than 16%. So ACIP, in continued support for direct language to remove barriers to facilitate the uptake of language, made the following recommendations: that healthcare personnel, regardless of age, should receive a single dose of TDAP as soon as feasible if they had not previously received TDAP and regardless of the time since last TD dose. Again, stating that TDAP is not currently licensed for multiple administrations, so after receipt of TDAP, healthcare personnel should receive routine booster immunization against tetanus and diphtheria according to previously published guidelines. And then the third bullet addressing that hospitals and ambulatory care facilities should provide TDAP for healthcare personnel and use approaches to maximize vaccination rates. And I just want to note that we will be posting these recommendations on the ACIP website in the near future. And so finally, want to discuss about the healthcare personnel, vaccinated healthcare personnel and the use of post-exposure prophylaxis. In 2005, the TDAP statement provided guidance on the use of post-exposure prophylaxis in vaccinated healthcare personnel. But, you know, the question is, you know, that's come up is, so for vaccinated healthcare personnel, is post-exposure prophylaxis necessary? Based on the 2005 recommendation, there has been one study which tried to answer this question. Is symptom monitoring without post-exposure prophylaxis following pertussis exposure non-inferior to antibiotic post-exposure prophylaxis among TDAP-vaccinated healthcare personnel? So during the study period, there were 116 exposures which occurred among 94 different healthcare personnel. Pertussis infections did not occur in 90% of exposed healthcare personnel who did not receive post-exposure prophylaxis, and in 98% of exposed healthcare personnel who did receive post-exposure prophylaxis. Want to note that the predefined non-inferiority criteria for the study were not met, which suggests that there may be a benefit to post-exposure prophylaxis in vaccinated healthcare personnel. And the study also did not assess whether vaccinated healthcare personnel would transmit pertussis. So from the study, ACIP's interpretations was that post-exposure prophylaxis may reduce infection. The ability of vaccinated healthcare personnel to transmit pertussis was not assessed, and the low risk of pertussis to both groups suggests both strategies may be acceptable. ACIP concluded this study does not rule out rule out post-exposure prophylaxis to vaccinated healthcare personnel. So ACIP considered the following for reducing risk of transmission of pertussis in healthcare facilities. Tdap coverage, as we know, in healthcare personnel is suboptimal, and the duration of protection afforded by Tdap at this time is unknown. Also, vaccinating healthcare personnel with Tdap is an adjunct to other pertussis prevention measures. The Vanderbilt study provides some data that both strategies are acceptable. And although data on the need for post-exposure prophylaxis in Tdap-vaccinated healthcare personnel was not definitive, ACIP felt that vaccine status does not change the approach to evaluating the need for post-exposure prophylaxis. We know anecdotally that different institutions have different approaches, and therefore the language that they considered needed to allow flexibility in implementation of the post-exposure recommendation. So the following is the approved ACIP language, which also will be posted on the ACIP website. The first two bullets are more of the background, with the third bullet being the specific recommendation. But with the background that healthcare facilities should maximize efforts to prevent transmission of Bordetella pertussis. Respiratory precautions should be taken to prevent unprotected exposure to pertussis. And that data on the need for post-exposure prophylaxis, or PEP, in Tdap-vaccinated healthcare workers are inconclusive. And so some vaccinated healthcare personnel are still at risk for Bordetella pertussis. And that Tdap may not preclude the need for post-exposure antimicrobial prophylaxis. So as I said, and I wanted to stress, the language we wanted to maximize on the flexibility, because we know, as we said, different institutions have different ways of implementing and prevention measures. So post-exposure prophylaxis is recommended for all healthcare personnel who have unprotected exposure to pertussis and are likely to expose a patient at risk for severe pertussis. So, for example, that includes hospitalized neonates and pregnant women. Other healthcare personnel should either receive post-exposure prophylaxis or be monitored daily for 21 days after pertussis exposure and treated at the onset of signs and symptoms of pertussis. So I also wanted to let you know the future considerations for Tdap to be discussed by ACIP. We began a discussion, presentation discussion with ACIP at the February meeting on the use of Tdap in pregnant women. The other topics that we will include on our agenda are cocooning strategies, to revisit what the actual language is and to see if there's any ways, again, to create more direct language and help, removing barriers to uptake. Also, the issue of revaccination with Tdap. So Tdap was recommended in 2005. One of the questions that remains is, what is the duration of protection? You know, how long will Tdap afford protection in people who receive it? And knowing that, what is the next step? Is there going to be revaccination, and when? And then the fourth bullet is that Tdap licensure for ages 65 years and older. So right now there's the recommendation of the off-label recommendation for use in 65 and over who are going to be around infants. We know that there's one pharmaceutical company who's filed for licensure with FDA, and that's pending. If licensure is granted to expand the indication to use Tdap in 65 and over, then ACIP will be revisiting and potentially modifying the current language. So I wanted to close my talk with acknowledging the members of the ACIP Pertussis Vaccines Working Group for their work and dedication on this effort, as well as my co-authors on this. And thank you.